We're back, everybody, and the topic today is failure to diagnose cancer, and it is a huge topic, and so we're going to really try to narrow it down to its essence. Bob, welcome back.
Welcome back to you.
And Bob, what is the significance of delay in terms of diagnosing cancer cases?
Cancer, as I'm sure everybody recognizes, grows. The larger it gets, the worse the possible outcome is for the patient. The longer it goes on, the more chance there is that it's going to spread outside of its initial site, which, of course, is also very bad for the prognosis of the patient. Ideally, you want to be able to find and detect cancer when it's still self-contained within the organ that it starts as, be it the breast, be it the lungs, be it the stomach, be it the colon.
You know, give us, from your own experience, give us some examples of that.
In terms of?
Of delay in diagnosis.
Well, I mean, I think the delay, the best example that I can ever give regarding delay of diagnosis is Mrs. Jones discovers a lump in her breast. She goes to see her primary care physician. The primary care physician erroneously says to her, "Don't worry about it, Mrs. Jones. You just have fibrocystic or fatty breasts. Come back and see me next year for your annual physical." A year goes by. She comes back in. Now the lump has grown. Now the doctor finally gets concerned about it, sends Mrs. Jones off for mammography and possible biopsy, which he should have done a year ago. There's been a year delay in the diagnosis. Contrast that. So you have to be able to show that not only does the doctor depart from what we call standards of care, but that there has been some harm to the patient because of this delay. Contrast that to the same exact situation, but Mrs. Jones comes home and she says to her next door neighbor, "Gee, I just saw my doctor today, and he tells me it's okay, wait for a year." And she says, "Oh no, go see my doctor." The week later, she sees another doctor. The doctor does the right thing, sends her for mammography, ultimate biopsy, and now her cancer is diagnosed at a very early stage. In that case, there is no claim because of the fact that there has been no harm to the patient. So same exact malpractice, but one, there is a significant delay, the patient is harmed. One, there is no significant delay, and thank God the patient is treated on a timely basis.
But Bob, the patient comes back a year later, she has cancer, it's more advanced, but in terms of the significance, in terms of that delay, that time delay, is it significant, is it not significant?
If it is a substantial or significant delay, it is a significant thing because, again, as I just said earlier, cancers grow. They have each particular cancer has different growth rates, but cancers grow. Cancers spread. When they get larger, when they spread, then it becomes more deleterious to the patient's health and, of course, their prognosis. So early detection in all cancers is absolutely key and crucial. Anything less than that is suboptimal.
Now, in terms of bringing a claim or a theory of liability, cancer cases are a little bit unique in the sense that the doctor did not put the cancer in the patient.
True.
So what we're looking at is more a prognosis, which has to do with a loss of a chance. In other words, if you're diagnosed at a very early stage, you may have almost 100% chance of cure. Whereas if you're diagnosed at a late stage, you might only have a 5 or 10% chance of a cure. How does that work in the law? What's the theory?
Well, it's very interesting because recently we had the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts back in 2008 in a case that is called Matsuyama versus Birnbaum, where the loss of chance doctrine was finally recognized in Massachusetts. It has been recognized in a number of other states, but had not previously. Prior to the loss of chance doctrine case, Matsuyama case, you had to show that the patient had a better than even chance of being cured had the cancer been diagnosed in a timely fashion. In the Matsuyama case, it basically said that it sort of arose out of this dissatisfaction with this all-or-nothing rule, and basically it says that even if the patient had a 40% chance of survival, had the patient been diagnosed in a timely fashion, that was enough to be able to prevail in a loss of chance or a medical negligence case. So it's basically saying that at the time the doctor saw the patient, if the patient had a significant or substantial chance of survival with timely treatment, and that chance is lost, even if it is a 30 or 40% chance, that is still a recoverable, actionable and recoverable claim.
Which is closer to the truth as to what really happens in these situations. It's not by delay what doing it in a negligent manner. I mean, we're not talking every type of delay case. You have a case because you still have to prove that something is done below the standard of care before you can even get into the courtroom. So what we're really talking about is just negligence. Could you tell us a little bit about that process? What in terms of your screening of the case, you've had your nurses look at it. What has to be done further, and how does your firm handle fees?
Well, our firm handles fees on a contingency fee basis.
And what is that?
What that means is that we only get paid if we are successful. Generally, most or all the costs are advanced by our firm, which can be very considerable, as you know, Frank. So basically, it's what contingent fee agreement used to be called the poor man's key to the courthouse, because most people could never afford to pay lawyers such as you or I on an hourly basis. The amount of hours, as you know, that goes into the investigation, preparation, trial of cases such as this is enormous. So what this does is it gives every single citizen of Massachusetts and every other state that allows contingent fee agreements the opportunity to be able to retain qualified lawyers and not have to worry about how much it's going to cost them.
So, I mean, that's a major relief because, as we all know, not only are people suffering with their disease, but there are many, many economic ramifications to having a cancer that is diagnosed at a later stage, which includes not being able to work because of the disability involved. Now, we talked about the fees and the costs. What are the major costs in all medical malpractice cases have to do with medical experts? And in breast cancer cases, it's a little bit even more costly. And tell us why that is.
Well, sure. I mean, physicians that we consult to find out whether or not there's a valid medical negligence case are expensive. They charge hundreds of dollars per hour to review all of the various medical records, to review pathology slides, to review imaging studies, CAT scans, x-rays, such. So the evaluation process, after it gets out of what I call the in-house evaluation, which is our own in-house nursing, to the outside experts, that's when the costs really start to accrue. And of course, once there is a case that we feel is worthy of putting into suit, then the costs that are involved go up astronomically because we're consulting with our experts throughout while we're taking depositions of defendants, other healthcare providers. We're consistently consulting with our own experts and continuing to pay very substantial hourly fees to doctors who really are taking time out of their day of treating patients and working with us. And again, we will only, as you know, your firm will only consult with very highly qualified physicians because the opinion of your physician is crucial. And if you don't have a very highly qualified physician to give you that opinion, then the opinion's not worth it very much.
And what type of experts? I know there we have to, you know, as lawyers, we have to prove, first of all, liability, which means we need an expert on the standard of care. But we also have to prove causation in terms of that deviation from the standard of care causing an injury. What are the typical type of experts that you'll see in a breast cancer case?
Well, it depends on the type of case. Whether it again depends on who dropped the ball. Was it the primary care physician? Was it a surgeon? Was it a radiologist, which we commonly see a failure to properly interpret a mammogram? So the first expert we have to consult with would be what's called the standard of care expert. And in, say, a missed CAT scan or a missed mammogram reading, that would be a radiologist. So if the radiologist opines and says to us, Mr. Schumann, the signs and symptoms, or imaging, the imaging findings on this mammogram were clear, the doctor missed them, then we still have to go to part two, which is then an oncologist, a doctor who specializes in treatment of cancer, to find out from that doctor, had this cancer been picked up on July 1st, 2000, would this have made a difference to Mrs. Jones? Or was it essentially a no harm, no foul? So in generally, in all cancer cases, we're looking at a standard of care expert and we're looking at an oncologist.
And that's really at a minimum because, as you know, things get more complicated when genetics get involved and when you have pathology slides that need to be read as well. Could you explain that a little bit?
Sure. The pathology of all cancers are different. And many times that we're going to need to have a pathologist to be able to, I mean, generally, Frank, as you know, we're going to have a relatively good idea. Once the cancer is diagnosed, and it's going to have pathology analysis by the hospital that does it, whether it's the Dana-Farber, Brigham and Women's, or UMass Memorial. But many times we're going to want to have those slides evaluated by our own pathologist to see was that pathology reading that was done in the hospital, which we hope was done correctly, was that done correctly? Are there anything that we need to know about the pathology or the essence or nature of this kind of cancer that changes our view of it?
And Bob, when we come back, we're going to talk about how the new medical malpractice law comes into play here. Thank you. We'll be back shortly.